there, friends. Happy Wednesday afternoon, just after 1 o'clock on 720 WGN. Yes, you are on the right station. It is still John Hanson now in for John Williams on this Wednesday afternoon. And thank you so much for joining us. I know a lot of folks still in the holiday mood. Some folks are back to work today, but as you can tell, traffic pretty light out there. A lot of folks have the day off. Either way, whether you're leaving work or you've been off the whole day, appreciate you joining us here on this Wednesday afternoon. Elif, did you have a wonderful holiday? Because you were not in Monday, Tuesday. It's your first day back for the week, right?
Yes, just like you. Well, maybe not.
Yeah, I was in here on Monday filling in, but I wasn't on the morning WCIU. I've had the last couple of days off, which was wonderful. So,
good.
Do you have a good holiday? Everything good?
Everything is good. I saw my sister and brother-in-law who live all the way in L.A., and so that was nice.
That's nice. They flew in here then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they came about a week ago, so
Sweet. Eric Rung in the newsroom, you do anything fun for the holiday? You feel good, or are you around here all holiday?
I was working over at TV. I was doing CLTV. I was anchored the early morning there, but my parents came into town, and so we had a big feast for Christmas Eve, and I made some homemade pasta, put it with my mom's homemade sauce, and brajoles, and meatballs, and some stuffed calamari, so yeah, it was great.
Wait, do you do the fish feast? Are you Italian?
I am. My mom's side is Italian, and so we do the Feast of the Seven Fishes. However, because we don't get together all that often, I love my mom's meatballs, so she'll make the two sauces. She'll make a fish sauce, and then she'll also make a meat sauce.
That's amazing. See, I've been a fisherman my whole life, just very, very limited in that, but I can't even name seven fishes. Do you know the seven fishes off the top of your head, or
Well, there's a lot of families that do it differently, but bacalav, we've got... calamari.
Calamari, okay.
Sometimes herring.
Okay.
Sometimes...
You don't have to name them all if you don't know them.
Well,
I mean,
it can be mussels, it can be clams.
Okay.
I mean, it a lot of families do a lot of different things. It just kind of depends on...
Oh, so there aren't seven set ones that
not
you have
that
to
I'm
do.
Aware of. Okay. I could call my mom real quick and see if we could probably get her on. I don't know.
312-981-7200. If you know all the fishes or if everyone does things differently. I don't know, because my aunt is Italian, and she has one fish dish to kind of pay homage to that, but she doesn't do all seven. And I just thought, I can't even name seven fish.
Like, obviously, I couldn't either.
Walleye, perch. That's what I'm thinking. That's what I would do is fish here in the upper Midwest.
Bass.
Yeah, I could do a little smallmouth, a little largemouth. Maybe have a little northern pike, but there's so many bones in northern pike. That would be as if you were up to northern Wisconsin, you were just pulling fish out of a Tomahawk Lake or something like that. Those would be the seven fishes. Maybe a little whitefish, a little panfish. But I know it's different in Italy, obviously. And, you know, I had the really fortunate chance to study abroad in northern Italy when I was in college, and I had no idea how big fish was. And, you know, when you think Italy, if you've never been there, if you don't have a lot of Italian relatives, you think meatballs, you think red sauce. But obviously the fish really big there. So, let us know what the fish are there. And Eric, I'm glad you had some time off and with the family. That sounds nice.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Are you currently Googling the fishes as we speak here?
I was sending a text to my mom, to be honest with you.
All right, well, you let us know. You keep us posted on that.
I think she brought my Nana's, Christmas Eve dinner card of the ingredients here at some point.
Oh, that's great. Okay. Well, yeah. Send it when just chime in when you find out, Eric. Okay.
I'm on it.
All right. So we got a packed show here today till 3, and then I already see Brian Noonan working on the next show. He'll be on from 3 to 6 for RoCon. A little bit later, we're going to be talking about the story that made news right before the holiday, and it's kind of trickled on through the holiday. The story of the wrestler out of New Jersey who was forced to cut his hair before a match because the referee determined that he had was breaking the rules. His hair was too long. It was in dreadlocks, and they had to cut it off right before the match. He won, and now there's this big debate about whether, you know, rules are rules, and that's what they should be doing, or whether, no, there should be some leniency. The hair doesn't play that much of a role in it. So Carmen's going to join us before he jumps on with Ro at 3 and chat a little bit about that, because I have a lot of questions. I never wrestled before, whether it was in WWE format or in, you know, official wrestling format. So I got some questions on why that would matter and what you all think about that as well. We're also going to be chatting... I'm looking forward to this interview coming up in just a little bit. You might have heard in the news that Boeing is being sued by one of the families, a local family that was involved in the lost someone in the crash. I forget the exact name of it, but it was a Lion Air crash, Flight 610 from last year. They're suing Boeing right now, saying that they're at fault, that Boeing's at fault for the crash. And the lawyer's actually going to be joining us at 1:30. I'd love to pick his ear about that sort of thing, because we're still in the early stages of this investigation. So maybe he knows a little bit more than the rest of us do. So we're going to talk about that as well, but we also have a great prize to give away. So guess what, folks? We're going to play a little Finish the Headline. That's a game I like to play here on the show whenever I get a chance to fill in. I'm going to give you a little bit of a news story that has a little twist in it, and if you can guess what that twist is, if you can finish the headline, you are going to win a pair of tickets to see the Blackhawks play the Boston Bruins in the Winter Classic at Notre Dame Stadium this New Year's Day. Yeah, I got that music going. Here we go. Oh, by the way, leading up to the game, be sure to visit the Blackhawks Hockey House, now open at 333 North Michigan Avenue, just south of the Blackhawks store, and filled with one-of-a-kind team exhibits, exclusive Winter Classic merchandise, and much more. And there's the NHL Winter Classic Park, free fan festival in Millennium Park. So enjoy games, foods, and drink, and you want to meet and get autographed from the Blackhawks. That starts December 29th through the 31st. So I got a pair of these tickets. All right, are we all ready to finish the headline? Elf looks really excited. We're ready to go. It's going to be a fun one. So here is the start of this story as I find it right now. Yes, okay. We just talked about data breaches, actually, on the Winter's Business Lunch. Well, there's been a data breach of a unique kind overseas. So someone has hacked into something that's a little bit unusual, not something you think that someone would be able to hack into. But they've hacked into something, and they're controlling something that people use, I don't want to say every day, but they use often, sometimes at parties. There's been a big hack into something that people use as a gathering place at parties, a hack into something that you wouldn't expect. So we're going to go to the phone lines to try and figure out eventually who that is, what the breach is. 312-981-7200. What has the hack been in? You can also text it in, but you can't win. By the way, we got an update, Eric. Walleye, salmon, trout, tilapia, snapper, flounder. I don't know if those are the seven.
I don't remember any of those when I was growing up, but...
Yeah. Eric, I don't know if you heard about this story. Don't guess the answer if you know it, but there was a big hack into something rather unusual. I don't know if you've heard this story before, Eric. It was very unusual.
Very unusual.
Yeah, something to hack into. You wouldn't expect hackers to hack into this, but they have hacked into it. So.
I don't know the answer right offhand. Let me think about it.
All right, you keep on thinking. All right, let's go to Beverly. Beverly, you're on WGN. What have the hackers gotten into now?
Alexa.
Alexa. Yeah, I'm sure hackers have gotten into Alexa. I've heard stories about that. I know that they're even used in criminal examinations. But you are not correct there, but you're not that far off, Beverly. You're pretty close. It is not Alexa. Thanks for playing, okay?
Is it an appliance?
Or is Boy, I don't know how to answer that. And that might be a clue right there. I don't quite know if you'd consider this an appliance. You might buy it at a place where there are appliances sold, if that helps. Let's go to Patrick. Patrick, you're on 720 WGN. What do they hack into?
I'm going to guess karaoke machine.
That's a good one. Well, what would a hacker do? Just put on a different song? How would that work?
Maybe. Change it up on them mid-song.
Yeah, mid-song. Just switch it on them. Hey, Patrick, do you have a go-to karaoke song, or do you not partake in the karaoke?
I do not have a go-to karaoke, sorry.
All right, so you wouldn't mind. That's okay, Patrick. It is not a karaoke machine, but that is a good guess, because obviously that's used at parties. Bill had karaoke, too, on the line. That is not correct. Let's go to Dave. Dave, you're on 720 WGN. What have hackers hacked into now?
The public toilets.
Public toilets? Oh, like ones that flush, like if you're at the park or something?
Well, in Europe, they've got public ones.
Oh,
we have
right.
gas stations and houses there. You got to go into, you actually have to pay to get in.
Oh, that's right. You got to pay like 10 euro cents or something like that. No, that'd be something, though, if you're just sitting there and all of a sudden rogue flushing was happening. That'd be quite a hack. David, that's not the answer. Thanks for playing, though. We appreciate it.
Okay.
312-981-7200. What has been hacked into? Thousands have been hacked into. Let's go to Frank. Frank, you're on 720 WGN.
Hey, have they hacked into Evites, online invitations?
Oh, no, that's a good answer, though, because I imagine it's a website. So I guess what would a hacker do, invite people that you don't want to your party?
I would, how about just crashing them?
Just crashing the site, or just crash the party themselves. Exactly.
Crashing the party.
An old-fashioned hack into. Frank, no, that is not the answer, but we appreciate you playing. Again, we're looking for the answer. The Blackhawks playing the Boston Bruins in the Winter Classic at Notre Dame Stadium on New Year's Day. All right, let's see if I can give a better clue into this thing. Well, we've had a lot of answers. Some are hotter and some are colder. And that is part of your clue as well. You might be hotter, you might be colder. 312-91-7200. Tell you what, let's take a quick commercial break. We'll see if we can finish the headline after this for a pair of Winter Classic tickets on 720 WGN. Okay, 720 WGN, John Hanson in for John Williams until 3, and we're trying to finish the headline here. There's been a big hack across the pond. Well, that might be another hint for you. Let's go to Ken. Ken, are you hotter or colder? What have they hacked into?
Thermostat?
Thermostat, no, but that's, I see where you got the hotter, colder clue, and you're on the right path, though, Ken. And also, Ken, you bring up a good point. Do you have one of those Nest thermostats, Ken, or do you have the old-fashioned one?
I have a digital, but it's not online or anything.
Oh, okay, so no one's hacking into your thermostat.
Not at all.
Staying safe. No, Ken, that's not the answer. It's not thermostat. Had someone chiming in baby monitors, which is horrifying. I'm beginning to learn that we just have everything in the world that could possibly be hacked into. Okay, so your clues are hotter and colder are a possibility. Happens sometimes at a party. And let's just say that this hack reveals a real washed-up security protection. 312-981-7200. A real washed-up security protection. Let's go to Linda. Linda, you're on 720 WGN.
Hi, my guess is smart TVs.
Oh, no, it's not smart TVs, actually. That's a great guess, though. If I give you another chance, Linda, hotter or colder and the security is a little washed up, got any other guesses? I'm putting you on the spot, Linda. It's okay. You think about that a little bit longer. We're going to go to Lori. Lori, you're on 720 WGN. What's your guess, Lori?
Hi, not washing machine.
No, but you're close. It definitely involves something with washing, but it's not the washing machine. 312-981-7200. Again, we're looking for what got hacked. That's pretty surprising. You wouldn't expect it to get hacked. And the winner's going to get a pair of tickets to see the Blackhawks play the Boston Bruins. Let's go to Kevin. Kevin, you're on 720 WGN.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your guess?
Hot water heater.
No, but that's close, Kevin. It is not a hot water heater, but we are getting hotter and hotter and hopefully not cooler as we go through these guesses. And let's go to Frank. Frank, you're on WGN. What was hacked into?
Hot tubs.
Hot tubs is correct. Ding, ding, ding. Thousands of hot tubs hacked and controlled remotely because of a hole in their online security. They found out that an attacker could make the hot tubs hotter or colder. They could control the pumps, the lights, via an app from far away. I think that'd be, that's one of those innocent hacks, right? Would you ever want to freak people?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, Frank, wouldn't that be fun to freak people out while they're having a hot tub party?
Freeze them out or cook them out.
Exactly. You could see, you could maybe make like a disco light show in that hot tub or something. I don't know. I think that'd be kind of fun. Well, guess what, Frank? You have won the pair of tickets to see the Blackhawks play the Boston Bruins at the Winter Classic. So you need to stay on the line, okay? You stay on the line, Frank, all right?
Thank you.
All right, congratulations. All right, so that was fun. Finish the headline for a chance, of course, to win those Blackhawks tickets. Yes, it is the hot tub. Was reading the story on BBC. Pan Test Partners, the UK security company that carried out the research, warned that the hot tubs were not the only household items at risk. They say that there's a lot of different things connected to the internet, many different things that you guys have been guessing all along. Things like refrigerators can be hacked now, baby monitors, as we said. There's next to no security with some of these things, so after what we talked about with the data breach, that is obviously something to keep in mind and important to worry about. Okay, so we're going to shift gears here a little bit, and we're going to dive a little bit into the news and the world of coming out of the White House. I'm still trying to stay fairly apolitical here as we're, it's the holidays. It's a nice chance to be relaxing. But President Trump certainly had a really interesting few days as he spent some time alone, as he reminded us, at the White House on Christmas Eve. He did have Melania there for a little bit, and they were answering some phone calls. And even though we have a partial shutdown of the government, they still were keeping the NORAD line open to track Santa Claus. And President Trump got a chance to actually chat with one little girl, I believe, to talk about the NORAD tracking system. I think we got that clip, Elle, if you want to play that.
How are you doing? How old are you, Goldman? Well, that's very good. You just have a big time. Are you still a believer in Santa? If it's seven, it's marginal, right? You just enjoy yourself.
It's kind of hard to hear the audio between the clicking of the cameras there and the echo of the room. But and by the way, you should let everyone know, we're about to talk about the magic of Santa. So if you're driving around with the children, I still believe in Santa at the age of 34, of course, as we can. But what the president said was, he said that he was talking to a seven-year-old. He asked how old she was. She was seven. And he said, do you still believe in Santa Claus? And he kind of went, oh, at 7 years old, that's still a little bit marginal. And I think it was a collective jaw drop across the United States. And this was a nonpartisan jaw drop, in my opinion. This is, and I don't like to just, you know, poke fun at the president all the time. And look, we're going, this is low on the totem pole of issues of importance in our country. But I couldn't believe, I mean, seven. There's no way. Does he just not understand exactly? I mean, I know he's had kids in the past. Maybe he wasn't as intimate in the raising process as some of us are here in middle-class America. I know he has a lot of help with those things. He's a busy man. He should have help with those things if he can afford that. That's totally fine. I'm not judging that. But 7 years old seems like an incredibly young age to make that comment. Well, the Tribune had a piece today. And Aleph, what did it say? It said that, fortunately, she didn't know what marginal meant, right?
Right.
So she's okay. Everything's okay. The magic of Santa lives on as it should because he's true and delivers presents. He's resting today after a really busy couple of days. But, Alva, did that strike you as a little strange when you heard that?
When I read the headline, I went, what?
Yes.
Marginal?
Yes.
I don't think that's even the right adjective.
Right. Well, I think he's saying is at seven, you start to change your mind about certain things. But it's not seven. There's no way it's seven. Maybe some kids have their own beliefs at seven about certain things. But certainly you just don't blanketly say that to someone, some seven-year-old, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can hear how careful we're being about it right now as we chat about this important discussion about the everlasting magic of Santa Claus. Because you never know who's listening. And Santa's magic is incredible and lives on. And we should always believe it forever. Certainly past seven.
Yeah, but I just love the scoff of one of the photographers in there. Like, yeah. What did he just say?
I know. And he just seems to have this inability. And again, I'm not trying to knock, you know, I have a lot of friends that will knock him at any chance they can. And I'm a little bit more centrist than they are in terms of this stuff. There's legitimate things that you can have disagreements with politically wise. But this just seems to play to, he does this sort of thing. He plays to this. He's just not that, he has these appositives, these moments. He needs to fill the space with something. It got me thinking, Elif, that, you know, they train you in improv. I took some improv classes at I.O., nowhere near as good as the actors and actresses that are on the stage every single day. But he would be not very good as an improv actor. You're not supposed to just fill every pause with what thought comes to your brain. You're supposed to let things breathe. So I thought it'd be fun if I did a little improv with the president. You think that'd be fun, Elif? Maybe?
Yeah.
Thank you. You're the only one listening. So this is what it would be like if Donald Trump tried improv theater. So just a little background. In theater, in improv theater, the slogan is yes and. So if someone says something, you're supposed to affirm it and add more to the situation to make it a real positive scene. If you've seen The Office, Michael Scott tried improv and he did terrible at it because he always brought a gun into every scene and shot everyone in the scene and it just made for bad improv. Or he would change the scenarios. All right, so Elif, you ready to play?
I am.
We're going to see if this works. John tries stuff like this all the time. This is my first go at it, okay? All right, so here we are. Mr. President and I are going to try improv in a scene. And Elif, do you have a suggestion for us, by the way?
Puppet show.
Puppet show. The suggestion is puppet show. Okay, here we go. All right, Mr. President, ready to go. Here we go. Okay, here we are at this puppet show. I am the legendary puppeteer, John the Amazing. And, oh, by the way, here's my puppet, Donnie.
You're the puppet.
Oh, okay. I guess I'm the puppet. All right, I guess I'm now the puppet. I'm talking to the puppeteer, sir. Things have been really rough here at the puppet show lately, right?
And we're doing very well, probably as well as anybody has ever done.
Okay, well, I guess I was wrong there. Anyways, at the most recent puppet convention, sir, it was sure tough when we lost that competition, right?
You know what? I'm not going to get into it because we won. It doesn't matter. Well, we won.
Okay, sir. All right. I'm just trying to do some improv, Mr. President. You know, I want us to be this downtrodden, down on our luck group of people.
I mean, nobody can believe that's a believable story. Listen to that story.
I know. It's improv, though. I'm sorry for the confusion.
There is absolutely no collusion. That has been proven.
I didn't say, I said confusion. Look, we're playing characters. It's improv. It's fun.
I'm president, and you're not.
I know. This is improv. We're pretending to be people that we're not. Look, it's I.O. Look, guys, in the audience, there's a bachelor party here. We're ruining it here.
There's a big question mark on your head, and you can't do that to the party.
All right, fine. Fine. It's my fault. I've ruined improv, Mr. President. You, as always, you were perfect. The best. You were the greatest.
Didn't expect that reaction, but that's okay.
And so that was the end of my scene of President Trump. Yeah, he needs to fill the space with noises, and it just drives me crazy. Look, policy aside, again, he just should just learn to pace himself a little bit, embrace a pause, think about what he wants to say, especially when he's talking to a seven-year-old about Santa. Quick commercial break, then more on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. You may have heard the news about a lawsuit filed here in Chicago blaming Boeing, who we know well here in the city, for the deadly Lion Air crash that happened last year. The suit is on behalf of a family, and joining us right now is Mike Demetrio, partner at Corboy and Demetrio Law Firm. Mike, first of all, thanks for sitting down with us here today. We appreciate it.
John, it's my pleasure to be here with you to try and help.
So the family is not a Chicago family. This is a family from Jakarta, correct?
Correct.
Why the filing in Chicago?
For the basic reason that Boeing chose Chicago to be their home, and from a corporate responsibility, this is where they should answer for their actions.
You and I have talked off the air a little bit about how you guys have done a lot of cases involving airplane crashes. You have expertise in the subject just by talking to experts themselves and representing many clients over the years. Would you say it's too early in the investigation process to be assigning blame and suing Boeing at this point, considering we don't have a cockpit voice recorder yet, and searches have been going on and off about that? Are we too early in the process to be assigning this blame to Boeing?
I don't think we're too early, certainly, to launch the civil litigation that's involved, because the lawsuit in and of itself is designed to answer a lot of issues. And we do have the flight data recorder, which is extremely valuable in our investigation.
Before we go any further, I do want to take a moment to, at least, of course, recognize the destructive loss of life and the terrible situation. Do you know much about the family you're representing? I mean, who's the man, I think, that you're representing in this case?
He was a wonderful gentleman, 40 years old. He was a businessman in Takar, and left his parents and three siblings, who he was enormously close with and supported.
I think sometimes when news covers these stories and talks about the litigation afterwards or the causes of, sometimes we lose the thought that these are human beings with families that have lost a lot.
They have, and the devastation, you know, passengers, flight crew, you know, so many people are affected by a mass disaster like this.
How are you convinced that this is Boeing's fault?
Several reasons. Number one, the plane's actions at the time of the crash. As you know, there was a brand new mechanism in this plane that was designed to be anti-stall. And what the flight data recorder has established is that device kept kicking in and driving the nose down.
So to regroup for some people that might not know, when you say it's designed to be anti-stall, when a stall occurs, meaning depending on maybe the angle of attack of a plane, it's too high in the air, or depending on the speed, not going fast enough to generate enough lift, it will push the nose of the plane down in order to counteract sometimes the intuitiveness of pulling a plane up. A lift, when you want to generate more lift, you push down to gain more speed to create that lift again. So this thing kept on activating. Should it have been activating at that point?
All indications are the plane had sufficient airspeed, and this system shouldn't have been in play at all.
Do we know for sure whether that is a result of bad sensors? Could have been, and there's a story out that this might have been bad maintenance, or is there still room that this could have been pilot error? And I guess what I'm saying is, isn't there still room for maybe other factors to be in play here besides Boeing to be part of the blame?
Certainly.
So that doesn't discredit, this doesn't, by suing Boeing specifically, you're not out, you know, eliminating other potential litigation moving forward?
Not at all.
Where are we at in this investigation? I mean, we're still obviously in the phase of discovery, or do you feel like we've really gotten a good picture of what happened here?
I feel, based upon everything that has been seen, that there is a solid picture. The 737, you know, MAX 8, the components of it, and the other main issue, of course, is the communication between Boeing and the air carriers.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. So the reason why Lion Air is not in your lawsuit is because it's up, you believe it's up to Boeing to, you know, to train the pilots properly how to deal with this sort of situation. Is that part of what you're contending here?
Boeing has to provide the training and the information to the air carriers, who usually are the ones who train their own pilots. However, a component of this plane is their manuals, and that's been true in aviation since the Wright brothers, really.
So you say the manufacturer's airplane is, quote, unreasonably dangerous. That's shocking. This is a brand new plane. This is, relatively speaking, a brand new plane. I flew on, I think, one of the very first flights of a MAX 8, and we had some minor technical difficulties. We were waiting at the tarmac for some changes that had to be made. Pretty normal stuff, obviously. That would strike fear into anyone. I mean, there's a lot of people flying today, tomorrow, this week. Should some people be worried about the MAX 8?
Well, my answer to that is sure there should be concern because of what happened in this particular instance. But that's been true of a lot of different versions of the 737 if you go back in time. What we need to do is get answers to alleviate the concern. First, get the answers for the families of these victims. And then secondly, provide the aviation public with peace of mind.
Is the NTSB part of this investigation? Did they fly people out because a Boeing plane was involved?
Yes.
So when you make when you put this lawsuit into the course of action, is there discovery you're looking for? Do you have subpoena power? How does that all work for, including myself? I don't know how the litigation of these things work. Or does the MP, do investigators tell you, hey, pump the brakes, we're coming at you with this report, it just takes some time?
Twofold. You're okay. Right in both ends.
Okay.
I can, through the process of the court system, gain a lot of information that will in no way interfere with the NTSB. And when I say the NTSB, our National Transportation Safety Board is involved, but so is the other agencies overseas and in Europe also. That'll all be valuable information. But as far as gaining the flight manuals, gaining who authored those manuals, gaining who the engineers were that designed this new system, that can all start right away.
To a critic that says, why not let this play out until we get a full report before we move forward with this, what would you say?
I would say that would be costing valuable time to get information that will help the family and all the victims of this particular crash.
How many cases have you done involving planes going down?
Me personally, over a dozen. My firm goes back to the 50s.
Wow.
And major crashes people here are familiar with is the American 191 crash,
here in Chicago,
the U.S. Air 427 crash, regional crashes that occurred here, if you recall the Halloween crash.
Oh, in Northwest Indiana, yeah.
Yeah.
Of the American Eagle.
Right, the night Dick Butkus was, number was retired.
So I guess my question is compared to those other cases, is this a normal timeline for litigation to begin?
Absolutely.
So this is not unusual in any sort of way?
Not in any way.
So what are you what are you asking for? Is it a certain amount of money? I don't know how this all works. How does it get filed?
Illinois procedure, which we obviously follow, we demand to go into the highest level of our court system, which is the law division of the Circuit Court of Cook County. The rule is you have to plead that your damages are in excess of $50,000. That sets where the lawsuit will be processed by the court. Then immediately we have, as you pointed out, subpoena power. We have the ability to command documents be produced by Boeing dealing with the 737 MAX 8. And then ultimately, there'll be depositions of engineers. A lot of it, as you're aware, John, is very technical. And that whole process will unfold, again, with no interruption of the government investigation.
Do a lot of these things end up in settlements?
Almost exclusively, 100%.
So
very rare.
Very rare that it would go to
a jury trial.
So what's the timeline moving forward on these sorts of things? How long will this take to sort out? Obviously, this will be happening concurrently with an investigation.
Correct. I believe, actually, the way the court system is now run here, which is amazingly efficient, that the case would be ready for trial possibly at the two-year mark.
Okay.
That's an estimate on my part. The government or government's reports, usually take a year. So the two you know, will proceed in that fashion would be my expectation.
We had a caller on the line asking if do they think Boeing will countersue. Do we see entities suing individuals or other parts of a different, you know, the airline, or do they usually, no one's suing each other within the entities of a crash like this?
My experience, and again, I've dealt with every major air disaster in the last 30 years, 25 years, yes, they always sue each other.
And that takes a long time, too, to sort out.
It does, but my experience, again, especially in the U.S. air crash, we resolved all the victims' cases, and then the manufacturer and the air carrier carried on for 2.5 more years.
Wow. So I have a question, because I've always thought, there's like a myth that goes around, and maybe it's partly true, is that when you buy that ticket, you are forfeiting the right to sue if something happens. Is that true? Is that true at all? How does that work?
That couldn't be more inaccurate.
Okay.
If anything else you can think of.
Really?
No.
So there's no contract you're entering there where you take on the risk that comes with air flight?
Not at all.
Do you take on any risk with any sorts of things that, I mean, obviously delays are part of normal situations. Can't sue on a long delay or anything like that, can you? I guess I'm asking you questions you may not know the answer to right
off the top. Well, no, I know all the answers to those, yeah. But no, you're not, by buying a ticket, you're not giving up any rights you have under the Constitution, under the civil justice system, wherever you are.
I guess what I'm asking, and this is hopefully no one has to deal, and safety in the United States, we've been very fortunate. We're through a nice long streak, knocking on wood and everything you can, of having no major accidents with fatalities here, and or with major sets of fatalities, like a whole loss in a long time here in the United States. So do airlines often come with a quick settlement offer right away? Is that something that airlines try and do to mitigate a future lawsuit? Does that happen when you, in your experiences?
Not my experience.
Okay. So there's been no offers to families of any kind so far?
None that I've ever heard of. No.
Okay. All right. That's another myth I heard.
There was, you know, one instance I remember. American wrote checks in the Little Rock, Arkansas crash to immediately help the families, but not settle the case.
But it wasn't a preventative thing for moving forward.
No.
I have another question. Does Boeing, obviously Boeing is, you know, they're prepared for these sorts of situations to arise. So are American, United. They all have plans, disaster plans for when things happen, not only from a PR perspective, but do they, I hate to put it so more, do they budget for things along these lines? Like, I guess what I'm saying is, do you know how much you can get out of Boeing in this situation? And do you know you don't?
I know this. That every family's loss is unique. And I know that Boeing, because of the nature of the corporation, is able to answer the loss of each individual family.
And I think that's an important way to wrap this up. It is a fascinating part of litigation that, again, I hope no one that's listening ever has to be a part of. And it is important to remember, of course, the 189 passengers and crew that were killed in the accident. That's the most important thing, of course, at all, that they spent their first holiday, many of them this past year, without their families. All right, Mike, thanks for breaking this down. I know it's a serious subject, and obviously we'll don't mind stopping by if you have any advancements in the case, okay?
I certainly will. Anytime I can help, John, I'd be happy to.
Appreciate it, Mike. .720 WGN, John Hanson in for John Williams until 3. Yeah, that was a big news story filing on Monday about Boeing, and certainly an interesting case that affects not only local, a big local business, but of course the entire airline industry. And now that's what was shocked me the most, they calling that plane, dangerous. I mean, a lot of people are flying in that plane. Kind of cleared up his answers there as well. So, yeah, we always like to bring the newsmakers in to talk directly to them when we can. Speaking of news and newsmakers, let's talk about the news click, because obviously it's been a couple days since we had our last news click question. So, producer Elif, what was our most recent news click question?
Should the United States pull troops out of Syria? A. Yes, we can't police the world. 22%. B. No, the Middle East needs the U.S. presence. 78%.
Okay, so over three quarters of people say that we should not pull troops out of Syria, and then 22% agreeing that, yeah, we can't police the world. And like everything, it's a fine line. I mean, I think it's interesting how people are jumping all over President Trump for bringing troops home. That's something that's always been heralded as a success for other past presidents. But at the same time, George W. Bush, in fact, he even used the same frame that the mission accomplished sort of thing. It's always not a good idea to prematurely declare victory when victory has not been had. So I think it is a fine line, but people do seem to take any opportunity they can to disagree with the president when they can. That's just my own personal opinion. But producer Elif, what is today's news click?
A high school wrestling match in New Jersey wouldn't go on without cutting one wrestler's dreadlocks against his will. That's fair. A. He still got to wrestle and win. B. That's not fair. This should have been thought through better.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, obviously, with this cutting of the dreadlocks. And we're going to get into this a little bit in the next hour. And I think that it's hard to just pin this down to a yes, okay, no. Because, yeah, I think that, you know, there's got to be rules that govern the sports that we play, the sports that we do. And kids need to follow those rules for safety, for competitive advantage, everything along those lines. But at one point, are the rules too stringent? At what point can we not take a step back and say, okay, yes, there are rules there. Is there another solution? Let's take 5 minutes to find out a solution, not 90 seconds in order to do it. So we've offered a few answers. Elif, I have a personal question for you.
Oh.
Well, not personal, but professional. I guess professional. How long did it take you to perfect that voice? You were really spot on.
I don't know. I just did it one day in the office. I don't even remember the first time, but I've been doing like... Sometimes I'll go up to my niece and nephew and I'll go, I'm sorry, I can't do that for you. And I'll do the robot thing, mm-hmm. my arms. Yeah,
you'll do the whole arm thing, yeah.
I don't know. It's really good.
It's very spot on, Elif. All right, so go to WGNradio.com to answer the news click. A high school wrestling match in New Jersey wouldn't go on without cutting off the wrestler's dreadlocks against his will. Is it fair? Is it unfair? And a little bit more on those answers in a bit. Quick break here on 720 WGN. WGN, a good Wednesday afternoon, everyone. We're in the 2 o'clock hour now on 720 WGN. John Hansen here filling in for John Williams. And we're going to have the conversation in just a little bit about the wrestler out of New Jersey. The text line already blowing up about that, and I'm ready to blow up with everyone. Certain arguments on both sides are making things a little complicated, but we'll get to that in just a little bit. Talking right now about Chicago politics. It never gets more interesting than that. Democrat or Republican, we can all agree that Chicago politics certainly is interesting. And joining us from the Daily Line is Heather Sharoon. Heather, how you doing today? Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Thanks for having me, John.
Oh, absolutely. Before we dive into the big stories this year and what's coming up next year, tell us a little bit about the Daily Line.
So we cover city, county, and state politics, and we send out a newsletter bright and early every morning, which will tell you everything you need to know to be in the know on politics and policy throughout Illinois.
And the website is thedailyline.net, so go there for all sorts of things. And right off the top, the story I see at the top right now, 2018 Cook County Year in Review. That's a good place to start. That's what we were going to talk about in general here. And boy, what a year for politics here in Chicago, as always.
Absolutely. And the county saw a lot of change, with probably more to come. Of course, Toni Preckwinkle is running for Chicago mayor, even though she was just reelected as Cook County Board President. And there are two fewer Republicans on the Cook County Board. They were swept out of office on the blue wave that also brought J.B. Pritzker to power as governor-elect. He'll replace Governor Bruce Rauner in just a few weeks now.
You teased the mayoral race, and that's really what I want to start with because, boy, that was, I mean, talk about surprises in politics in Chicago. That was a whopper when the mayor announced he wasn't running again.
It was just a 8.0 earthquake on the Richter scale. And, you know, nobody really had any inkling that he was really seriously reconsidering plans for a third term. He had raised almost $8 million by that point for his reelection and seemed to be laying the groundwork to run for a third term, arguing that he had done what he promised to do when he was elected first in 2011 and then reelected in 2016, that, you know, the city's finances were in much better shape, and that, you know, the police department was on the path to reform after the death and scandal of Laquan McDonald's death. And then he dropped out, and then we now have, I think, somewhere close to 20 official candidates on the ballot 60 days from today.
That's crazy. And I can't believe it's only just 2 months away. It'll fly by. Back to that decision for a second, because it did catch a lot of people off guard. Of course, he said he wanted to spend time with family. I imagine, which could, of course, be partly true, but the timing of the announcement was I don't want to say suspicious, but there was certainly another big announcement coming out of the coming days after that that might have played a role in it.
That's right. So it, Mayor Rahm Emanuel announced that he wouldn't run for a third term the Tuesday after Labor Day, which was just a few days before the verdict in the Jason Van Dyke murder trial. He, of course, was convicted of second-degree murder for killing Laquan McDonald while on duty. And most people at City Hall, you know, say the two events are inextricably linked, because had Jason Van Dyke been acquitted and had the city erupted in protests or riots, Mayor Emanuel would have faced an even more difficult time getting reelected. And the sense was that he needed to make a decision before that verdict, so it didn't look like he was being forced out of office rather than leaving sort of on his own terms.
Do you think the 2015 election, coupled with the Laquan McDonald situation, equals what we have here? What I mean is a somewhat surprise runoff result in 2015 with Chuy Garcia.
That's right. It's, you know, sort of hard to think back to that back now. But, you know, nobody really expected Chuy Garcia to give Mayor Emanuel such a run for his money and force the first runoff in Chicago political history. And he did that by not only having the Chicago Teachers Union behind him, but also sort of sweeping up the sort of the burgeoning start of the progressive movement, which, you know, is sort of in full flower now. So he came very close, and Mayor Emanuel was reelected, I think, on the strength of his performance in on the South Side, where he won a fair number of votes from African Americans. And let's not forget, he had the endorsement of former President Barack Obama, who, you know, was and remains very popular. I think the question was, would he have been able to replicate that performance in the wake of the Laquan McDonald scandal? And I think that would have been a far stretch.
What do you think the legacy of Mayor Emanuel is as he's preparing to leave office here in the next few months?
Well, you know, he would say, hey, I've got 4 months left in office. I have not left office yet, and I've got plenty on my plate. But I mentioned that the city was in really bad financial shape when he took office in 2011. The structural deficit was more than, it was nearly $700 million. He has significantly, his policies have and the improving economy has reduced that structural deficit to somewhere close to $80 million. So that's a big change. He will argue that the police department has grown in the last couple of years by almost 1,000 officers, and I think that has to be part of his legacy. But again, I think that along with being former chief of staff to Barack Obama and sort of serving President Clinton in the White House, in the first couple of paragraphs of his obituary is going to be the Laquan McDonald scandal, which I think really changed policing not only in Chicago, but, you know, sort of throughout the country. And that will, I think, be up there and how he handled that scandal.
One thing I think about Mayor Emanuel's legacy, and we chatted about this on air a couple weeks ago, was the idea that, you know, Mayor Emanuel would fly to Japan, would fly to China. He would be a advocate for the city of Chicago in a worldly way that other mayors in the United States, including like New York, Houston, I mean, big cities, they don't have that global reach of a mayor actually shaking hands with investors and business owners across the globe to either bring business or to bring jobs to the city. Now, I think in many ways that's a positive for the city, but there's also some people that say that he should be focusing more on what's happening in Chatham instead of China, which I just realized now is a great political saying. But
trademark that.
Right,
trademark that.
Exactly. So I think that's kind of a mixed bag, his global impact, right?
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. You know, he was very proud of the fact that he brought, you know, huge multinational corporations to move their headquarters to Chicago. You know, he sometimes served as the city's booster in chief, and that, you know, meant that whenever he, you know, went on cable news or was quoted in the New York Times, you know, it helped raise Chicago's profile. And he certainly did that as he brought sort of new life, not only to the Loop, but the West Loop, which has just really been transformed in his tenure. So I think the question a lot of people are going to be asking, as they asked after former Mayor Richard M. Daley left office, is who can fill the mayor's shoes? And Mayor Emanuel's argument in 2011 and then again in 2015 was, you know, I am a superstar. I'm a political superstar. I can get, you know, the president on the phone. I can get money flowing to Chicago. I can go to Springfield and I can advocate for what the city needs. Now, certainly that record is a mixed bag. And now with non-existence, of course, in the Trump administration.
Right.
But we're not necessarily going to have whoever is elected mayor next is not necessarily going to have anywhere close to as the political profile that Rahm Emanuel did. And let's not forget, you know, Rahm Emanuel is still a young guy. He's got a whole, you know, third or fourth act in front of him. So I would expect that he will be a frequent presence on the op-ed pages, a frequent presence on CNN or MSNBC. And he's got a book coming out about, you know, sort of how important it is for mayors of big cities in the Trump era to sort of push progressive changes forward. So, you know, he may not be mayor of Chicago this time next year, but he will still be very much part of the discussion, sort of pushing sort of what he's sees is the right thing for Chicago.
Speaking of who will be mayor next year, Heather, do you mind staying on the line? We're going to take a quick commercial break and chat more about the 2019 election of the Chicago mayor. We'll break down some of the candidates, the front runners, maybe some spoilers. That'll be after this here on 720 WGN. 60 days till the mayoral election. Can't believe it's already coming up that quick. Here to break it all down is Heather Cerrone of the Daily Net. And Heather, I think the common wisdom is that there's two leading candidates, but and we can talk about who they are, and then I think that there's a lot of truth to that. But Heather, I mean, this is going to be about consolidating blocks, because when you talk about how many candidates there are, you know what, 12, 13, 14%, that might be enough to get you to the runoff.
It absolutely could be, which is crazy. I think if you held down, you know, and twisted the ear of most political reporters, most people think Tony Preckwinkle, the Cook County Board President and head of the Cook County Democratic Party, and Susana Mendoza, the Illinois Comptroller, are probably the front runners at this point. But it's such a wide open field, and it's really hard to say, you know, who is going to sort of emerge after, once all of the ballot challenges are finished, you know, who's actually going to be on the ballot, and what issues are sort of going to drive the debate and the tenor of the campaign.
Well, you mentioned the tenor of the campaign. If it does end up with Mendoza versus Preckwinkle in a runoff, we kind of got a hint of what that might look like in the determination of the signatures. Already we've seen some sourness.
Absolutely. You know, Tony Preckwinkle challenged Susana Mendoza's signature, saying she didn't have enough. Eventually, Tony Preckwinkle withdrew that challenge, saying, okay, Susana Mendoza did get at least 12,500 signatures. Tony Preckwinkle also challenged the signatures of Lori Lightfoot, the former Chicago Police Board president. Lori Lightfoot is on the ballot. Tony Preckwinkle had to withdraw her challenge against her as well. We're still waiting to see whether Cook County Circuit Court Clerk Dorothy Brown will make the ballot. We should know that maybe this week or early next week. So it's still a little bit in flux, but we do know that there will be a Daley on the ballot again, Bill Daley, and, you know, also along with him, Paul Vallis, the former CPS school CEO, and of course, Gary McCarthy,
right.
We were talking about Laquan McDonald before the break, and he was police superintendent at the time of Laquan McDonald's murder.
Yeah, it wasn't so long ago that Gary McCarthy was on the top of a lot of people's list for making the runoff. Not that he couldn't still be. Again, you mentioned consolidating power between police officers, perhaps firefighters as well, in the northwest and southwest parts of the city. Why do you think he's kind of fallen down the quote-unquote power rankings?
Well, you know, I think Gary McCarthy has a couple of challenges that he's going to have to overcome. One, I'm a native Chicagoan, and I will fully admit that I cannot imagine that the mayor of Chicago with a New York accent, and Gary McCarthy, for better or for worse, is a very strong New York accent. I know that my in-laws react almost viscerally when they hear that accent.
Really?
But also, yes, yes. But also, you know, he's sort of still, you know, dealing with the fallout of the Laquan McDonald scandal. He's basically accused Rahm Emanuel of covering it up. You know, he was fired, and he's really going to have to sort of expand his base from, you know, sort of very pro-police, pro-sort of Republican. And let's not forget, he attended a fundraiser for Bruce Rauner during the governor's race. So he's going to have to sort of expand that. But like you said, you know, would that even limited base be enough to get him into a runoff with all of the other sort of, you know, parts of the electorate fracturing? It just might, and I don't know the answer to that question.
All right, so, and you, of course, you're a diligent reporter. You would never take a side. And just a reminder, of course, we're speaking about possibilities, of course. But when we talk about a horse in the race that maybe getting some coverage here, but is, I guess, an underdog. Do you have an underdog that you think could possibly emerge through this thing and make it to a runoff that might surprise some people?
I don't think you can count out Amara Anaya, who, of course, is supported by Chance the Rapper and Kanye West. And she has the possibility of sort of catching a newly energized, progressive, young electorate's attention. Whether or not she's going to have the money to sort of get her message out there, I think is probably the biggest question I have about her campaign. But she is really interesting to watch speak, and I think she's really well positioned to sort of capture the people who maybe voted in November and are feeling newly energized about politics and consider themselves progressives, and maybe not even really consider themselves Democrats, but want to have a say in how the city is run, and they want the city to be run very differently than how it was run under Rahm Emanuel. And so she could consolidate that push. However, she's going to have to go through Tony Preckwinkle, who is walking a very fine line between being a very well-established politician with a long history dating back to the Harold Washington era of city council politics, but is also sort of positioning herself as the progressive in the race. And let's not forget that she has the Chicago Teachers Union backing, and it was the Teachers Union that really pushed Chuy Garcia into that runoff against Rahm Emanuel 4 years ago.
All right, so a lot of people are listening right now. They're like, I don't live in Chicago proper. I live in the burbs. I live downstate. I want to hear about that. You guys cover Springfield politics too, and let's talk about it, because obviously we're going to have a new governor sworn in soon, and with that, a super majority in the Senate and the House. The Democrats picked up seats in both houses, right?
That's right. So not only do they maintain their supermajority in the Senate, they extended that supermajority, and they regained the supermajority in the House under House Speaker Michael Madigan. So J.B. Pritzker, when he takes office, he will have a General Assembly all colored blue and ready to sort of, you know, work on policies and programs that have been stymied during the 4 years of the Rauner administration.
Let's look at our crystal balls, Heather Sherrod. All the way to the end of December 19, will marijuana be legal by the end of the year?
I think there's a really good chance that it will be. J.B. Pritzker has said that he favors it. There's been a bill working its way through the General Assembly with many hearings and sort of, you know, studies and that sort of thing that was proposed almost 2 years ago. So the groundwork has been laid. However, you're still going to have to face a couple of obstacles. One of them, of course, is the notion that there are people in jail right now convicted of crimes related to marijuana, and I would imagine that there'll be some push to address those issues. Also, you're going to find, conservative lawmakers, both Democrat and Republicans, worried about whether or not it will unleash sort of public safety concerns. Like, are we going to see drugged driving? Is there going to be an uptick in sort of crime? How is all that going to be handled? So if I were a betting woman, I'd probably put money on it being legal, but I'm not, so I'm safe either way.
Progressive tax or the elevated tax, gradual tax, whatever you want to call it, was proposed by J.B. Pritzker. That's a little more complicated, right?
It is. So not only do you have to get the, you have to essentially amend the Constitution, so you've got to get it through the legislature, and then you've got to get it through a referendum of voters. So that couldn't take place until 2020 at the earliest. So the question becomes, how does the state pay its bills in the interim? And that's a really big question. And does the economy sort of continue to grow as it has, or are we sort of heading into a downturn, and does that make lawmakers more reluctant to raise taxes at a time when people may be starting to struggle a little bit more? It's really hard to tell.
So the referendum, could they, I mean, there's obviously still, while there won't be a gubernatorial race in 2019, there still is an election of some, would that be where it would maybe go on, would it be November 2019, are there other, or can they call like a special, how does that work, do you know?
So it has to be the next statewide election.
Oh.
So there's a lot. So it's not something that could happen overnight by any stretch of the imagination.
All right, that's interesting, because I think that that's something that people think that the governor can do with the flip of a switch. I know some people might be very relieved to hear what you're saying now. Others maybe not so much. We got about 1 minute left, Heather. What's one thing you are watching in 2019 that maybe all of us, maybe not that we're not paying attention, but we should pay a little bit more attention to?
Well, you know, I will be judging the last 4 months of Rahm Emanuel's tenure about whether he's able to convince the city council to borrow $10 billion to start paying down the huge pension debt that the city will face in the coming years. I think that could, you know, he certainly sees that as one of his main priorities before he leaves office. And whether the city council chooses to do that, I think could really set the tone for how the next mayor deals with the pension crisis, which will be at the top of his or her agenda the day after they are elected.
And we can keep track of all that where, Heather?
TheDailyLine.net.
Heather, have a great rest of your holiday, okay? Thank you for the time.
You too. Happy New Year.
Yeah, you too. Heather Sharon of TheDailyLine.net. Be sure to check it out. And again, they have a morning email that keeps you abreast of all things going on in Chicago and state politics. 720 WGN, John Hanson in for John Williams here on this Wednesday afternoon. Joined in studio by Mark Carter. Mark, how you doing?
John, it is good to see you. Merry, merry, happy, happy.
It's good to see you in sunlight. Normally our paths cross in the middle of the evening sometimes, so it's good to chat with you here.
I'm definitely out of my comfort zone right now. Hopefully it'll work out okay.
So I brought you in to you didn't just come in for us, right? You're in on the Roe Show, right?
I am, yes, I'm in for Kevin Powell doing sports, and then I'm hanging out tonight on the night side, too.
Oh, cool.
So we'll get to spend some quality time today.
So I made you come in a half hour even earlier than you may have wanted to.
It was an absolute pleasure and a thrill, and I loved getting the text from Elif. Will you come in and talk wrestling here? Of course I will. It's one of my favorite topics,
your
actually.
Go-to. Yeah, so this story blew up kind of before the holiday. Didn't really want to tackle it too much during the holiday, but it's a story that a lot of people have heard now out of New Jersey, that this wrestler that had relatively short dreadlocks, I'll say. I've seen gentlemen wearing and women wearing dreadlocks much longer than this.
No doubt.
Forced to cut it, depending on the language you use. He was given a choice to cut the hair and wrestle or to not cut it. So some people have already jumped on me for saying that he was forced to cut it. No, of course, he could have chosen not to wrestle. I understand that. But if he wanted to participate in the match, which he later won, he would have had to cut off his dreadlocks. And I think most people have seen the video of this thing now. It's kind of a frantic moment. His coach is like pumping him up while he's getting his dreadlocks cut off. He goes in there, he wins the match. Later, there's some details now from the family saying that this referee was late and wasn't there for the weigh-in, which is normally when these inspections take place. Mark, what are your initial reactions to when you read this story?
Well, the first thing, it's just sad, right? I mean, here's a kid who's 16 years old. He's going to wrestle. He's had this hair before. For a while now.
Yeah,
I mean,
wrestled in it, yeah.
I don't know his whole history, but I know that he wrestled with that hair a week prior. And so now you've got lunatic referee. I mean, I don't think I'm going overboard with using that word there, where he's going to absolutely enforce the rules to the letter of the law because this has to happen or else. I don't know.
I'm not a wrestler. And so we were looking at the rules, and it's kind of. So did you find the New Jersey rules, how they are, what people have interpreted them as?
Yeah. So here are the rules, John, as we. According to the NFHS wrestling rule book,
okay.
A wrestler's hair cannot fall below the top of a shirt collar on the back, below his earlobes on the sides, or below his eyebrows. Now, I don't know if this is for his own safety that people are going to grab hair, but certainly the wrestler himself is not going to use long hair to whip around on the opponent.
This isn't WWE. This is high school wrestling. I found one, a grooming rule from Iowa, and again, there are different rules in each state, but I imagine they're about the same. And it says, in bold, coaches, police your wrestlers so the officials will not have to embarrass them. That's, first of all, said right here.
Right.
That requiring them to cut their hair, shave, etc. And it says the same sort of thing. Hair in its natural state, and that's caused a little controversy of whether dreadlocks are part of natural state or not, shall extend no longer than the top of an ordinary shirt collar, no longer than the earlobe, and not below the eyebrows. And also, they have rules for mustaches, by the way.
Oh, okay.
So hipsters can't participate in a lot of these things. But that they should have to put in a legal hair covering, which I know they then tried. I guess they read it. I guess my question to you, Mark, and we're having some texters say this, rules are rules. They're there for a reason. Why not enforce it to the letter of the law?
See, okay, I love the rules are rules, people.
Right.
Rules are rules. So if you're driving 56 in a 55, should you get a ticket?
No.
If it's 3 in the morning and you pull up to a traffic light and no one's around, are you allowed to go? Can you make a right on red at least?
Right.
You know, so I like to live in the gray world, not in the black and white myself.
I agree.
So, but a lot of people love the black and white.
Right.
Rules are rules are rules, and these are the rules. But to the rules are rules people who want to live that way, he was allowed to wrestle last week.
Right. They didn't grow. I know hair doesn't grow that long, that quickly.
So to me, it seems like the rules are not really clearly defined, or certainly not enforced that way.
Mm-hmm.
So then all of a sudden, you know, now you're going to spotlight this kid. Think about him now. He is on every. We're talking about him here. He's on CNN. He's on Fox.
I hope he uses it in a positive way. And so far, people have been commemorating and saying, look at how well he poised he was. He won the race. You could see he was emotionally moved. So hopefully, some good comes out of this.
I guess, but that's a lot to put on somebody 16 years old.
Certainly. My thing is, we're talking about high school. This isn't the Olympics where...
Oh, sure.
Like, and I understand. But, like, at the end of the day, why did this have to be... Why did this decision have to take place in these 90 seconds? First of all, if the ref was late, that's bad on him. He should just let the match continue, as he missed his chance to say that this isn't appropriate.
That's true.
Second of all, who cares if we wait five... Can we have a discussion between the coach, the player? Maybe the other coach doesn't care. Maybe the other player doesn't care. Why can't we take a moment's pause before we rush to this? And it was a weird scene to see them cutting off the hair, because he was looking at his clock, 90 seconds to cut off all the hair. That's crazy.
Right. Well, they didn't cut it all off.
The dreadlocks, yes.
Yeah, like just they shortened him up. I think, though, John, to your point, a reasonable discussion with all parties involved, that seems very prudent, right? That could have happened. I also... Okay, a lot of people are going at the coach too. You could have said, "All right, he's not going to wrestle. The rest of us aren't going to wrestle. We're going to forfeit the match." Mm. Now you're penalizing
other kids too.
So it's a real tough spot, right? And at the end of the day, like for me, I think can we have? I'm one coach here. I'm another coach here. Let me see what this kid's got. Okay. We will be comfortable if he wraps it back like this or whatever it is, and let's move forward. It should have been, in my mind, the discussion between the two coaches, not one man who's sitting there with a rule book in his hand and for whatever reason wants to enforce it to the letter of the law. That doesn't make any sense.
And refs make mistakes too, especially in high school athletics. These refs are not professional refs getting paid a lot just to do that. They're paid a stipend to show up, and we need more refs. They're always talking about how we need more refs, so hope this doesn't scare anyone away from wanting to contribute. But at the end of the day, what is the end goal of what's happening? It's not winning or losing wrestling matches. When you're talking about student athletes, you're trying to build an experience to shepherd them into the world with some positive stuff, and they've learned something. And I don't think this is the lesson that we're trying to teach these kids.
Right, and clearly not. And also, there is the side of, well, you have to learn respect your elders, respect the rules. When you learn that, then you start acting with more and more integrity in your life, and perhaps good things will happen to you, all of that. So this referee, and I think probably the people on the text line who are saying rules are rules, he is being taught to the value of respect and following the rules, and this will help him throughout his entire life.
Yeah, 630 says, life is tough.
Right.
When should we teach them that? What is he going to learn by having his hair ripped, like cut off from him? That, you think he's going to go forward now and say, you know what? That's right. Rules are rules. No, he's going to go and have the exact opposite feeling of authority figures and the let. It just, this is the difference between letter of the law and spirit of the law.
Yeah, and look, I get it. If you're a wrestling coach and you're a hardcore guy or a football coach, bad, it doesn't matter. And your rules are my students need to be in class on time every day. If this class starts at 8 o'clock and they're there at 8:01, I want to know about it. I don't want them allowed in the class. And that to me is actually teaching something. This is a whole nother animal of the guy just wrestled with this hair a week ago.
Right.
What is the rule that we're actually, what are we really teaching? What we're teaching that at any moment in time, some rando authority figures can actually decide to enforce rules the way he sees it, and there's right. nothing that you can possibly do.
Right. So, I've tried to stay away from this discussion because there is a whole other element, is the race element, which I don't want to jump into it because I don't think we know enough about it. Obviously, dreadlocks are sometimes more predominant in African-American culture than they are in Caucasian culture, white culture, whatever you want to say. And there's the referee was white. And there was a report, according to this family, I the news reports have reported too, that 2 years ago at a party, this referee made a derogatory statement towards another referee of color. That's another whole other element here, but I don't know if that even, that's an important discussion to have and a learning moment that we all should have, but I don't even know if that plays into my discussion on this sort of thing.
I'm just going to go out on a limb here, John, and say that it probably did have, absolutely was a factor. I would be shocked if it wasn't. And people get super bothered when you bring up race and people don't want to own the fact that they have biases and it is a normal human condition that we are biased.
Right.
And
we have prejudices inside of us, whether we want to admit it or not. Right.
So to become a more learned individual, to see when your biases are actually propping up and to be able to look and say, oh, I'm having a biased moment right now, I should step back from that. That's called, an evolvement of thought, right, if you will. And clearly, I think this referee was lacking.
Let's go to the phone lines. And I appreciate people when they call in. Texting is so easy to make a comment. 312-981-7200. I love when they put their voice to it. Let's go to Michael. Michael, you're on WGN. What are your thoughts?
I wrestled in high school for a short time years ago. And I know you had to have your hair short. But I'm probably comparing apples to apples and orange to oranges here. But to play on the New York Yankees, you can't have any facial hair or, you know, right, your hair below your ears or stuff like that.
Yeah, but Michael, that's a private company making a business decision, mm-hmm, and they're professionals that are paid to be part of a business model. That's not a public high school, I think, where people are taught and should express themselves however they see fit. But now that you're here, Michael, and your opinion, I appreciate it, but you were a high school wrestler. Did they tell you why hair needed to be short? What was the logic behind it?
Well, like you say, I mean, they were afraid to get it pulled, and another thing is I didn't like the headgear that you had to wear because it always pinched your ears and that, mm-hmm, and I would always try to secretly tear it off as I was wrestling. But I'd get penalized for it.
Well, isn't so? If it's about the hair being pulled, isn't then the student taking his own risk of his hair being pulled and him going down to the ground because of that?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, when your hair gets pulled, you're going down.
Yeah.
You know, just like there's rules where you can't, go into the groin area or stuff like that,
right?
Because you're going to get hurt.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Michael, we appreciate the call. Thanks for chiming in. Yeah, I think that is apples to oranges comparing it to the Yankees. But yeah, I mean, look, then the 847 says, didn't the school know the rules? I think everyone knew that there were rules in a book about this, but it's not like these schools and these coaches go through the rule book every single day. And again, these rules, it was okay a week ago. What changed in a week?
Right. Look, there's can sit there and comb through the rule book and the exact where his hair needs to be and over the earlobes and all this. At the end of the day, like, common sense?
Yes.
Can we have a little bit of that going on here? And, again, all of a sudden, in some tournament, at that moment, we're going to make this kid cut his hair in front of everybody. How could that have been the choice?
And that's the 2-7 says. Could, at the very least, could they have gone in the locker room to cut his hair? And that's where I feel like, man, this ref either had a grind out for this particular kid, this program. Maybe there's some racial undertones certainly involved in this sort of thing that they shouldn't be wearing their hair like that. And the public way in which they did it was embarrassing, I think, for the whole school.
Well, and I think maybe his authority, if he felt like that was on the line, and I've got to take control of this situation. This is my wrestling meet. I'm the referee here, yeah. And we're going to do things my way. And perhaps he just felt a little bit challenged on that and wasn't going to budge.
He's like Angel Hernandez. He takes over games. He made it all about him.
There's a beautiful reference to a guy who shouldn't be umping in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes they make it about you. Refs, it's not about you. Georgette, you're on WGN. What are your thoughts?
Hi. So this high school student, his actions spoke volumes for his character and the way he's been raised and the school itself. And everybody could learn from him. The ref, we all agree, was wrong. Just a personal thing, a moron, if you will. And, you know, this kid, and when you're a professional, you're being paid, you know, these millions of dollars. I watch football with my husband, and all the hair hanging out under the helmets, blah, blah, blah. My thought is, you know, cut that stuff off. But these are high school students.
Right.
It wasn't that long. It wasn't, you know, hanging or affecting the match whatsoever. And he stood there. When I saw the clips, it just I was proud and a broken heart at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, it just spoke volumes. And the ref, maybe just spend a little time with the parents at a parent meeting in a closed room. Call it a day.
Yeah, Georgette, I think you hit on something there that no matter what side you feel about it, you got to give credit to the kid. He didn't throw a stink. He didn't throw a tantrum, anything along those lines. He went in there. He obviously was emotionally tied to what was happening to him, and he still went in there and won the match.
Well, it was interesting. I mean, you look at the coach is white. Most of all, I think maybe all but one of his teammates were white. So here's a kid who knows that you know he's different,
mm-hmm.
And now he's trying. I don't know this young man
right,
at all,
right.
But trying to distinguish himself perhaps with his look and. You know, having a little bit of individuality here, nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely, it should be encouraged.
And to be put in that position, it's extremely disappointing.
847 said, judges interpret laws differently in their courtroom. That's an interesting point that, a lot of rules are written down, but sometimes you take the situation in hand. And I think that's what we'd want from whether they're judges or refs. Besides, inbounds or out of bounds, calls that are clearly are the number of seconds put on a clock, the infractions, the yards, the penalties, those are all by the letter of the law, that makes sense for the gameplay. But I think there should be discretion in certain rules, and I think that's an interesting point brought up there. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. The phone lines are lighting up. We'll take a few more calls on this. You're listening to 720 WGN. Carmen's staying till like next week or tomorrow or something. You're here the whole time.
I got a room down the road. It's going to be sweet.
708 says, the rules are the rules. There will always be one ref in some sport who will enforce a random rule. You simply deal with it. I think the kid did, number one. He did deal with it and won. And then this person says it would have been a non-issue if the kid was white. So that's interesting. The idea being that if the white kid had dreadlocks, this wouldn't have made national news. Which maybe it wouldn't have, but I think the fact that he is black, or I think he's, or yeah, is of color, I think that's the reason why the story happened in the first place. Like, that's why we have the story. It's because of perhaps a racial bias shown by a referee, not... Knowing that 100%, of course, I hate to say that with 100% certainty.
You can't prove that, John.
I know.
That had nothing to do with it. If he was a Caucasian gentleman, this would have happened just the same. You can't prove it.
Right, exactly.
I just have a slight hunch that probably was a factor.
Yeah, exactly. 219 says, speed limits, stop signs, red lights, no turn on red signs. These are laws. They are not suggestions. Just because a police officer is not there to enforce them, they're still laws. I think we're, again, comparing apples and oranges. But are you saying you've never gone a couple miles over the speed limit, police officer doesn't pull you over, they show discretion in that case?
I would love to have a discussion with that gentleman and or woman that laws are laws. So okay,
yeah,
okay. You should live your life having every law enforced upon you.
Yeah, right. Exactly. If everyone did that, we'd be living in a police state. 708 says, hi all. The young man was much classier in demeanor than the coach and should have been done out of camera view soon. Which I agree with. I think at the end of the day, the biggest mistake that they made is that this was so public and so in front of everyone. The only, I guess, blessing here is the idea being that since it was on camera, I mean, the one thing is we would have never known about the story. This is not a story if no one has their phone out and is taking a video of this. And no one would have heard about it. It's that image of him of that happening, which makes this indelible in the mind and why people want to talk about it.
Right. It would have been written up in a local paper, small blurb, never would have made it to John Hanson at 720 WGN filling in for Matt Bubala, who was sick. And it wouldn't have.
For filling in for John Williams, exactly. Yeah. So, I guess I'm thankful that we did have this image of this happening, whichever side you take on it. Because at the end of the day, and Carmen, I know you got to go get run and get ready, but at the end of the day, these are teachable moments. These are conversation starters we can have with each other, disagree if we might, but these are things that we can learn and teach and learn from. We shouldn't shy away from difficult conversations like this.
Now, that is an adorable way to finish up this conversation. It's true. We're having a nice teaching moment here. We can all learn something. I'm sure the referee learned something from this. I'm sure the kid learned something from this. I'm sure the parents are learning from this. The coach. And all of us having the discussion. So that's a great point. There is a teaching moment here, depending on how you sort of digest the whole thing.
Absolutely. All right, Carm, you go get ready for your show. I want to talk to LF2, because this is our news click question, right? Oh, bye, Mark. Have a good one. He tried to say bye. I had the mic off.
I just want to say thank you, John. Appreciate you. Good to see you.
You too. Have a fun day. Okay, LF, we talked about this news click question. We actually made a slight adjustment to it just because of sort of the wording of things. You want to talk about that? Because I think that was important. We had some interesting feedback from folks, right? Oh, let me get you up there.
Okay. I was debating whether or not I should do the Siri SFX.
No, you just tell us. So we've changed the question just slightly, right? The news click.
Yeah, I removed the, well, here's what it is. It's a high school wrestling match in New Jersey wouldn't go on without cutting one wrestler's dreadlocks, period.
Mm-hmm.
A, that's fair. He still got to wrestle and win. B, that's not fair. That should have been done. Sorry, this should have been thought through better.
I'll be interested to see what the results are. And those results will be tomorrow, right?
Yes.
And Bubala, hopefully, fingers crossed, will be in tomorrow for John Williams. Hopefully he's feeling better.
Yeah, thanks for filling in.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And I'll be on tomorrow as well for the Winterest business lunch. And we'll see if it goes in there or beyond that. At the end of the day, I feel like I just got a text from the 847. How many times are you going to say at the end of the day? And I just said it again. Sorry.
Oh, no.
I know. We sometimes in radio and TV I work, and we get in these ruts where we say similar things. When I do weather, I always say, or when I'm interviewing someone on the street, I say absolutely way too often. I probably said it on the radio too. So 847, thanks for calling me out on that. I do appreciate it, because I'll work on not saying at the end of the day so much. But
I'm sure 847 has their own fillers.
Oh, they do. They weren't being judgy. They were just letting me know that that's a little quirk I have. But I do think, in general, we are so fearful, and Carm kind of mentioned this, of gray area. We love things to be black and white. That's not only how we feel about rules and regulation, whether it's high school matches or whether it's the professional sports we watch. And certainly in our world and the sports world, there are some issues that are black and white. Issues that deal with life and death, for the most part, are black and white issues, certainly. But our rest of our world, as we talk each other through politics or anything like that, exists much more in these gray areas. And these are the gray areas that I like to talk about. And thanks for joining the conversation. But guess what, guys? We have a very special, not a guest joining us, but the legend, Brian Noonan. You're in for Rokan here today, right?
John, at the end of the day, I like to come in and do afternoon drive over the holidays.
Right at that end of that day.
Sure, right at the end of the day. Good to see you. How was your holiday?
It was really nice. I spent time with my mom's family on Christmas Eve. We do only hors d'oeuvres on Christmas Eve.
Oh, is that right?
No seven fishes, no sit-down turkey, no roast beef. My dad makes all, it's my favorite meal of the year. I just love taking little things on small plates, whether it's hot dogs and eating for a good 7 hours straight.
I like, that's a great idea. A
little shrimp dip. And then the way is, you know, you have the dining room and that's where all the hors d'oeuvres are, but then you bring a small plate and you continue the conversation. You talk to different people. You move around.
Right. And then you never get stuck with, not that this would happen in your family, people I'm sure can empathize with this. Sometimes you get caught in a conversation with somebody that it's over after 30 seconds and they want it to continue long into the night.
Right, and then that's when you say, I need a little bit more of a dip on my carrots.
Right.
Which is not a euphemism. You just go to the other room and you take care of that.
And even if it was a euphemism, it's still a valid point in this conversation, John.
Sure.
Let's
is.
Not dismiss that as just, listen, I just need that. Well, it was good seeing you. I will see you tomorrow
Saved
on
the
Winterest.
The
yeah, there you go.
All right.
I'll get out of trouble at the end of the day.